Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall liberals in a single bound. Not part of the political noise, but above it. Welcome to another edition of Political QRM, boys and girls. Hold on to your hats.
Hello, folks. Here we are again, Anne-Marie and Lou, to bring you the best of the week. Oh, I don't know. How about the ridiculous and the...
From the ridiculous to the sublime.
Sublime, yeah, basically. I mean, this past week was absolutely... I don't know. I mean, some of the statements that some of the politicians made, you know, it was one of the... You said what?
Or we did have... Tuesday this week.
Oh, Super Tuesday, yes. You know, well, the thing is that, well, the media was disappointed because they did not
see... No, I was disappointed.
Well, they didn't see the big killing that they thought they were going to see. They thought that, you know, it was going to be Romney all the way, and it wasn't.
No, of course not.
Nope.
But I don't, I mean, other than some, I don't know, Bill Maher. I mean,
oh, jeez.
You know, I sure as heck didn't expect it to be Romney all the way. You know, I didn't expect it to be anyone all the way. The only place I was hoping that it would go all the way one way or the other is Paul all the way out the door.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No.
He's going to stay there.
I
don't know what it is with him. I don't know whether he's in there to spoil it or if he just wants to get his message out.
What we discussed last time we had an opportunity, the distinct possibility that Romney was a spoiler.
Yeah, okay.
That he would run... Hard enough, what we used to call in service hot and black,
mm-hmm.
you know, or what we used to call, you know, full tilt boogie, you know, mm-hmm. and he would run that way against Gingrich and against Paul and against Santorum and against all the other guys, gals, and come, you know, come the nomination, just basically, you know, punch his time card, go home.
Sit on his butt, yeah, and let Obama just take shots at him.
Now let's include Paul into the equation.
Well, if you notice, he has not been attacking Paul in any of the states.
You know, he's counting on Paul to do one thing.
And?
Take away the votes from the other guys in the general, because, you know, Paul's not going to leave.
You think he'll run as a third?
If he doesn't get... He can still run Tea Party. He can still run Green. He can still run Libertarian. He can still run any...
He won't run Tea Party. Tea Party people don't like him. So,
I was using it as an example. He could run under any banner he wants to other than the GOP, and I have every suspicion he will.
That's a shame. But, you know, don't you think... And I heard this. I have to say this. I heard this on another talk show, and I can't remember which one it is. But whoever it is out there, I am giving you credit. This is not an original thought. If he does run third party, it may hurt Rand Paul in Congress, in the Senate, who is his son. I mean, basically, so he's not, you know... thinking about his son. He's a selfish person.
Yes, I was just going to say, let's just see if we actually believe he cares. You know,
exactly.
I don't think he does. I really don't. I think he's in it for whatever he's in it for. This is not his first trip down this little lane.
That's true.
You know, he's done this before. I think he's tired of doing it. I think he wants this time, this may be his hurrah, so to speak. Now, what kind of a deal he's got, you know, pardon me, what kind of a deal he's got struck, because, you know, ever since the last election cycle, everything's been so transparent,
yes,
you know, and well lit, you know, and airy, you know, since all of that stuff, you know, no more back room, no more closed door back room, smoke filled room deals, for who?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I haven't seen that happen yet. But anyway, who knows what kind of deal has been struck, what kind of deal has been offered, who knows what kind of...
And we know there have been deals, because that's the way politics is.
Let's not call it deals. Let's call it incentive.
Incentive, okay.
or disincentive.
Okay, I'll buy that.
What kind of enticements may have been mentioned?
Oh, I like enticements, yeah. Excuse me.
Who knows? Look, face it. The only one that actually made any appreciable dent, and I know Newt took some stuff, you know, but the only one who made a dent Tuesday was Rick Santorum.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sorry. Here we go with the Orville Redenbacher gig. No aspersion on the Redenbacher family, Orville, his kid, grandkids, great-grandkids, whatever. But, I mean, if you had to pick a guy that looked like, an American version of Mr. Chips, here we go, and Rick mm-hmm. Santorum is that kid. He's the straight.
Now,
I'm not saying the guy doesn't know how to have fun, how to shake his groove thing, how to go bowling, whatever it is he does.
He does.
I'm not saying he's a complete, get up in the morning with his suit already on, freshly pressed. But he is, in comparison, he's an ultra right. He's as close to a definition of neocon as we've seen in this race to this point in time. There were some others, yes, but to this point in the race, he's as close to a neocon as you're going to put. Even Gingrich is an old con. Santorum is a neocon.
Yeah, you do know that he won the Santorum won the Kansas caucuses.
Yes, he did.
And
so what I'm saying, he's the only one who made a dent in Romney's momentum.
Yeah, Romney won Wyoming, and he also won the Marianas Islands and somewhere else, Guam.
There were people on the Marianas Islands.
Yeah, there are.
He won two out of the three people there. So I guess
exactly. There you go. But
they're 0.001% of an elector.
I
remember the scores last night from the far west. The Marianas did beat Guam 7-2. That's an old George Carlin routine. I apologize. I can't help. In a partial score, Stanford 29.
I remember that bit. Yeah, I really do. May you rest in peace. Pieces, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Anyway, we're not going to get into that. But a whole bunch of things happened this week, though. One of them that really struck me was the Breitbart tapes that came out.
I have notes.
You have notes? This is great. He has notes.
Let me tell you. I can synopsize the Breitbart tapes.
Well,
so
only one. I only saw one, but but go ahead.
Well, I saw a couple of them.
There's more. Okay. All right, folks. That is not a problem with our transmission. That is
no. I'm sorry. Was I asleep? I was thinking about the Breitbart tape again. Listen, there's nothing on any of those tapes that I watched that's going to matter. One flea on a termite's butt come November.
I have to agree. Because...
If they could bury Jeremiah Wright...
Yeah.
And if they could bury Bill Ayers...
Mm-hmm.
And all this other stuff, you think it matters one tinker's damn... That he was there. And, okay, we still don't know his whole thing with the Harvard Law Review. We still don't know. There's stuff is all still buried. It's a stay there.
Yeah, I know.
Well, let's shine the light of day on what?
I know.
I thought it was going to be something that mattered. The way he was talking, rest his soul. The way he was talking, it was like, my goodness, we're not even talking about conventional weapons anymore. We're going nuclear, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I really don't think it made any difference, except to those people who are interested in the minutiae of politics and of what's really going on in this country, because people really don't understand or want to understand at this point. They need something that's going to smack them in the face.
Let me expound on what I said last week. Hold on, give me a second. Let me put my tinfoil hat back on.
Okay.
What if that's not all the tapes there were?
Supposedly, there are more.
Yeah, but I'm saying even supposedly there are more. But how many more?
I don't know.
I heard like 3 or 4 more, but maybe there were supposed to be a dozen more. And
oh, I see that tinfoil hat waving in the wind.
There it is, right?
And, come on.
I'm sorry, I don't actually wear the doggone thing. I keep it around for effect. It's a
okay.
problem. You know, but again, I'm snoozing through these tapes. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, where's the nuclear part?
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, it was awfully strange that he, you know, what was it, 15 minutes before they were supposed to be released, and he's in a box. You know.
Yeah, that is a point. No, that is a point. You know, but I don't know. You know, we're still trying to. I don't know. I think they're still waiting for the. The coroner's report on him. But.
Well, yeah, of course they're waiting for the coroner's report. The man was 43 years old. Yes, he was stressed, but he was basically, you know, he spent a lot of time in the gym and all that stuff.
Did he? I don't know.
Well, that's, I know, some of the stuff I saw online, I have no idea of the veracity of
it. They
know.
Said he had some heart problems.
Yeah, but they said he had some congenital heart problem that he had had, you know, his whole life.
Uh-huh.
You know, people do, hey, you know, people do drop dead. I mean, it happens.
That's true.
You know?
I mean, 17-year-olds on basketball courts have died.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
know, so you never know.
So I'm really convinced that, as I said last week, I think Brent Bozell would do well to hire, you know, some token little liberal college student on his staff, and if for nothing else, to start his car. You know.
Okay, liberal. Yeah, pay him well, and then, you know.
Yeah, pay him well. Give him, you know, or give him an internship, and he'll go to his handlers and say, "Oh my God, I got this job on Bozell's staff. Oh, all the information. I got. Oh, he ain't passing any information along except Mr. Bozell, your car's running."
Exactly.
<You
know. laughs> By the way, this was just breaking. Did you hear about the soldier in Afghanistan that? That went and killed a whole
bunch. That went on the shooting spree?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. I've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this before.
Yeah, now you'll be able to give a
let's go all the way back to me lying. You know.
Comprehensive opinion and expert opinion on this.
Let's go all the way back to me lie. Let's go further back. I'm sure stuff like this happened in 1777. You know, mm-hmm. I mean... you know, I'm sorry, the rigors of war are called that for a reason. You know, when they said war is hell, they weren't kidding.
Yep.
You know, there's only so much, I mean, you know, we mentioned a couple of times ago, we mentioned the fellow down in Fort Hood who went on a shooting spree against his own troops, well, not his own personal troops, but troops that were all...
That's different.
And then there was the other guy who went running around pitching grenades into tents in a bivouac site or some such thing.
I'm sorry, the one at Fort Hood was different.
It's different because it's somebody, theoretically anyway, from a different perspective in the fact that... But the man went nuts. You know, I mean, that's all there is to it. He went nuts, whether it was religious nuts or whether it was
No. Hassan down in Fort Hood, that was religious. Yeah. I'm sorry, that was because he was Muslim.
Regardless of what the motivating factor was,
yeah,
he went nuts. You know,
I have to disagree with you on that one. I don't think he went nuts. I think that it was a logical action on his part, and he did that all for Allah and to kill the infidels. There is nothing that says that, you know, if you're a member of Islam, you can't be in our military. And if there is nothing that says that you have to abide by the military, you know, rules and America's rules if you're a Muslim. You see what I'm saying?
You don't have to, but I think the fact that he was basically in the process of carrying out his daily routine, you know, over and over and over, every day, and then all of a sudden one morning, out the door he goes with a loaded gun, you know, I'm sorry, I think he snapped. Whether he was supposed to snap that day or any other given day, whether he was supposed, you know, people say, oh, maybe he's part of a sleeper cell. Maybe he was, but maybe he wasn't. You know, maybe he was just an ordinary, you know, guy.
Sorry, we're going to
be a Muslim.
We're going to have to disagree. You know, not when he's standing there screaming Allah Akbar.
Oh, no, they're going to scream Allah Akbar no matter whether they snap or not. You know, that's part of the gig. But I wonder, I do, when looking at the case of Giudice, I wonder, you know, was it an issue of he had planned this? Was it an issue of he had planned it well? Had he had a plan of attack and, you know, I'm going to go from this office to this office, from this building to this building, and I'm going to... Or was it one of those things he woke up that morning and said, I am going to shoot infidels, and just go running off shooting infidels? I think the latter. I think the latter. I really do. Because he didn't have any coherent plan of attack. You know, he didn't do it rationally in order. You know, it was...
And not disagree. Because what would he... No. Because... are any of these things rational? I mean, come on. The guys that come into whatever, wherever, with a body bomb or whatever the heck it's called, and they blow themselves up. That's not rational. I don't think anything like that is rational. I mean, for him to do this, I don't think he snapped. I think that he figured it was time, and this was a good time. Don't forget, these people were... He went into an area in which they were processing people going overseas and coming back overseas. And you get your biggest bang for the buck there. So I think that's what it was. Plus the fact that he has been documented as soldiers complaining about him when they came back, and he would basically grill them and say that they were wrong in going over there and killing or trying to kill, you know, the Muslims and stuff like this. So there's a long list of things, and basically our military ignored it.
Shrink, I won't kill.
Yeah.
Want to kill? In that regard. But the idea is that I just don't see the planning that a military man of field grade would have put into. And I'm sorry, you know, even if you're a doctor, you know, by the time you attain field grade, you have, you know, field grade experience and field grade courses and stuff like that you have to take to get there. You know, the tactics and strategy and things like that that you have to take to get that far as an officer in the United States Army. And again, you know, whether it's that fellow, whether we go back to Lieutenant Calley at My Lai, whether we go back to some of the things that are reported to have taken place. Heck, there were stories about the, you know, there every war, you know, the especially in the old days when, you know, you know, Lee surrendered at Appomattox Courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took weeks for everybody to find out the war was over.
That was then. I mean, you know.
And, you know, well, but the
And people were still killing each other, yeah.
Killing each other. And, you know, I mean, the people they found, what was it, in 1949 or something, they found this outpost of Japanese soldiers on some island.
Oh, yeah.
So things happen in under the banner of war that are just indescribable to someone who hasn't been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
And that's true. I have not. I'll be honest. I have not. You have.
But the idea of it, this Marine now, I think it's just a question he snapped. You know, he just had enough.
He did turn himself in.
You know, I mean, he came to his senses. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I'm
sorry, you know, you don't know. I don't know. The only two people in the entire universe that know are him and his God.
That's
you
right.
Know, that's it. And I'm not sure his God knows at this point.
No.
And look down and say, well, what are you doing, son? You know, but going down the same hallway, you look at the, and this is just stuck in my head for the last 24 hours. I cannot get it out of my head. In the Marine Corps, and you know my brother Marine, they vacillate a little bit whether they're former Marines, retired Marines, but there's no such thing as an ex-Marine.
Okay? Never an ex-Marine. Yes, never.
But, this Marine Corps guy that was a canine handler, and his canine was injured, and he wanted to take the dog home, and they said, we're not going to let you take him home, but he's in such bad shape, they're going to kill the dog. Euthanize the dog.
Well, actually, yeah, I know. He was injured, but he's recovered, but he's no longer good for IED, detection.
So that's what we used to call ain't worth feeding.
I know, but he would be just a good pet with the guy,
He would be an excellent pet for the guy. I know police officers that have taken their canines when they've retired the canines out or the canines have been injured. Police officers, military people, anyone who works with as an animal handler in that capacity. The bond is no different than if it was another person who was your partner, your backup. And then you take the fact that, and there, I'm sorry, there's going to be people listening who don't own dogs, never have owned dogs, or just don't understand, and I'm sorry, too bad for you, not for us. Anyone who's never owned a dog that, understands the unconditional love and devotion that a dog gives a person, especially in a stressful environment such as a canine operative at any level.
That's right.
It just is not going to get this, but that is stuck in my head. The whole thing. I talked to Al yesterday about it a little. No, I didn't talk to, I meant to talk to Al about it yesterday, and I did not, and I apologize. Al, when you hear this, we will talk about it. But it's something that's
Al,
stuck in my
Al,
head.
Al?
My brother, Al the Marine.
Oh, Al. I'm sorry.
But I know he's going to listen to this, and he's going to go, wait, we didn't talk about that. I intended to. When it comes right down to things that happened within the hospices under the aegis of the United States Marine Corps, Uncle Sam's misguided children, that's the thing that sticks in my head more than the guy who snapped. People snap.
Yeah, and no, they do. I mean, it can happen in any... any area, in any profession or...
Afghanistan, Iraq, the Seychelles Island, Guadalcanal,
exactly.
Grenada, Vietnam, the Barbary Coast. People snap under combat conditions.
That's true. Oh, but wait a minute, one thing you have to ask your brother Al about the new, the new face of the Marines now. They don't want to be known as just the people who, the force that kills people and breaks things. They want to be known for their kinder, gentler side.
No.
So it's no. See, this is it. The few, the proud, the wusses. I mean, come on, guys.
This we have discussed, and we've discussed it over and over. Any Marine that's been in, and I mean literally. If you were in 1970 and somebody else, or in Al's case, 65, and somebody comes along, joins the Marine Corps in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here we are all these years later, and they're sitting in a tavern somewhere, and they both have a Marine Corps hat or a Marine Corps jacket, and they start, when were you in? Well, 1965. Well, when were you in 1970s? And the guy who went in 1970 will turn around, you're old Corps.
Oh, really?
And this is something you'll hear amongst them, and you really won't hear it amongst anybody else, but you'll hear that, you're old Corps.
And what is that supposed to mean? What is old Corps?
The idea is, because the Marines are an evolving, a living entity unto themselves.
Oh, God in heaven. That's another thing I disagree on. Sorry.
No, they are a living, breathing entity other themselves. This is something you can't disagree on, because you don't have, I have family.
Fine. Okay.
And I've been in the military. This is something, the Marine Corps, there was a movie a couple of years ago called Jarhead.
Yes, I saw that.
And the one sitting on the end of a howitzer, I don't know what he was sitting on, turns to the other and says, I thank God for every day in the United States Marine Corps, where he allows me to be in the United States Marine Corps. Hoo-ah. There are people at some echelon of the Marine Corps that want to expose a different face of the Marine Corps.
Look, any of us who know and support the military know that all these people that serve are people. They have families. They have loved ones. It's only the people out there that hate them because they think that the only thing they are baby killers, is that I feel that they're doing this whitewash on them. And I don't think there's any need to do this because they are a fighting force.
That's what they do.
Yes, that's what they do. But, you know,
they call it the armed services for a reason.
Exactly. You know, and I don't think that, you know, and the Marines... I mean, you know, what are they going to do? Step on some grandmother if they're going, if they're, you know, doing something? No, they're going to help her if they can. I mean, geez, you know, I mean, this is ridiculous.
St. Ronald Reagan said,
yes,
that many people wake up and or go to bed at night wondering if what they did all day made any difference. The United States Marines don't have that problem.
That's right.
And, I mean, we've all seen the T-shirts, you know, we've all seen the bumper stickers. And people ask me, you know, all the time, oh, what you do in the Army? And, well, I jumped out of airplanes, and killed people and broke things and made a mess and left. Which does not really sum up what I did for 7 years in the Army. I mean, it really doesn't. But that's the esprit, that's the motivation, you know, stuff and the face that people see, and people get upset with it. You know, talk about the face that people see. You know, how many times you walk down through the middle of town, any town, I don't care what town, and you see some kid between 13 and 19 or 13 and 22, whatever year you want to call it, you know, and they're walking around with a T-shirt on with Che Guevara on it.
Oh, God. I swear to God, I really want to tear those off their back and say, do you actually know who this guy was?
Well, look, hey, in 20 years, those kids, grandkids, are going to be walking around with Joseph Kony on T-shirts.
Oh, yes.
Now, I can tell you a thing or two about a gun, though.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I think this is all made up. You know, we do have 150 military people over there right now.
Right now.
And I find it very interesting that all of a sudden all this stuff is starting to be publicized. This tape is coming out, and this video, and everybody's watching it, and everybody's just in horror, and the news has picked it up, and they've said how horrible it is. And yes, things like that are horrible. But unfortunately, this has been going on in Africa for decades. All right?
Decades. It's been going on for 25,000 years.
Yes, exactly. But I'm just saying in my lifetime, it's been going on throughout all my lifetime, all right? I mean, yeah. I mean, and when I was a kid, and we used to, I cannot believe I'm saying this, but we used to collect pennies for UNICEF because of the poor African children. Remember that during Halloween?
No, yes. They had the little milk carton shaped orange thing. Trick-or-treat for UNICEF.
Yes, and all this
crap. I did it one year because I think we talked about the year, and I don't remember what year it was, but I think it was second grade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we took the trip to the UN, the obligatory, you know, the obligatory school goes to the UN. And, you know, that year they were pushing hard on the trick-or-treat for UNICEF thing. And not so much the first graders, not so much, pardon me, the third graders, but the second graders were all really leaned on to do the trick-or-treat for UNICEF.
Yeah.
Well, I was no dope.
Well, I'm glad you weren't, because I was at that time.
The other kids all had their little orange box and go out, and they were, you know, they showed us how to do it. You stick the box out and say, trick-or-treat for UNICEF. You know, and I would put the box out and say, trick-or-treat for UNICEF, and then they'd, you know, oh, you know, isn't that wonderful, isn't that nice? And, I mean, those days, it literally was a penny, or it was a nickel, it was
That's right.
You got a dime, oh my God, a quarter, somebody got a quarter, oh my
mm-hmm.
God. But, you know, if you remember, a penny was worth something.
That's
you know,
true.
But I sandbagged it. You know, I turned around and I said, all right, trick-or-treat for UNICEF. And they put, oh, isn't that nice? And they put a penny. And then I turn around and I reach out with my pillowcase and say, oh, and now it's my turn. Trick-or-treat for me. You know, I turn around and said,
oh, no, okay. I still got the candy. Because there was no way I wasn't going to leave without candy.
Yeah.
Were you kidding
some
me?
Some kids, they didn't even bring a trick-or-treat bag.
Oh,
they,
for heaven's sake.
You know, they went way off the deep end. And, you know, trick-or-treat for UNICEF.
No.
And I said, you calm simps. You know, because believe it or not, in my second grade year, I knew what a communist sympathizer was, you know.
You were far ahead of me, sweetie, let me tell you at that point. No, but really.
You know, but I sandbagged it. I got my candy,
you
too.
Got, I would.
Back with that.
Hey, that's what Halloween was. Hey, it was for candy. No, this thing about Coney, I mean, no, I'm sorry. I think this is one of these things where Obama's going to try and get this guy, and he's going to be lauded as the most, fantastic man, and why these Americans won't vote for him, and the world loves him because he brought this horrible child, molester and oppressor and murderer to justice. And that's what we're going to hear. Yeah. And it's like, shut up,
and
world.
As soon as, you know something? They could kill him this afternoon. And nothing will change because there are five people waiting to take his place.
That's right.
And you kill those five, and there's five more. I got news for you. You know, that part of the world, the Congo, you know, Uganda. Angola, you know.
I mean, how many trillions of dollars has the United States, not only in taxpayer dollars, but, church dollars and charitable contributions, have we sent over there?
Let's call it untold
trillions. Oh, my God. Trillions. It's unbelievable. And still nothing has changed. And why? Because all the money that goes over there is taken by these third world despots, and they use them to, you know, line their own pockets, feed their own armies, and sell
and
it.
To some extent, they don't even do that. I mean, there's been the you hear the stories about, you know, the Quonset huts full of supplies, aid supplies that are also full of rats and overgrown with vines because it just sits there. Hmm. You know, there was a picture last year of all the light blue UN donated trucks sitting there on flat tires with vines growing through the cab of the truck and over the top of the hood, and because they had no need for a lot of this stuff, they wanted was the cash, and even the food that was sent over and dropped on runways, it was put into these buildings, these storage warehouses. It wasn't disseminated to the people. It was just left there to rot and feed the. They got great big old rats over there, because they're very, very, very healthy rats. This stuff happens, and nothing is going to change it. And 150 guys, I don't care which 150, whether it's Rangers, Marines, SEALs, I don't care who you're sending over there. You send 150,000 guys.
Yep.
And say, all right, we're here for 6 months. We're going to clean up this mess. They clean up the mess and walk away. And you know, like I said about leaving Iraq or leaving Afghanistan, it'd go to hell in a handbag by the time you cleared our airspace.
No, that's what happened in Iraq.
Yeah. And
they're back to their old ways.
It's happening in Afghanistan. We haven't even left yet.
I know.
So, it's all. And you notice how we've gone circular on this one? You know, the thing is, as far as the Marines concerned, I feel bad for the people that were killed for no apparent reason other than the fact they were there. But, you know, look what happened with Israel this week, you know, in the Gaza Strip.
Yes.
And I'm going to say something now that every person who has taken an oath has heard before, and it's something that most people have not heard, and they'd be shocked to hear it, but I will say it anyway. Rule number one is there are no friendlies in a combat zone.
That's right.
Rule number two is if you encounter friendlies in a combat zone, refer to rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but if you're living in a neighborhood, whether it's Gaza, whether it's Uganda, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Grenada, whether it's Vietnam, Cambodia, the Marianas, you know, during the Second War.
I was going to make a joke, but forget it. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Or Bedford-Stuyvesant. No.
If you're there, and, you know, going about your day, you know, doing whatever it is you do, and these, because they live in huts and hovels. But you're doing what you do. Oh, we're just trying to scrape out a, you know, survive. We're just trying to eke out a meager living, and, you know. And there's a guy in the house next to you who every so often, you know, rolls the tarp back on his roof and pops off a couple of missiles and then rolls the tarp back.
That's right.
and a fighter comes in and just kind of levels your block.
Yep.
You know, sorry.
Yep.
You took your chances. You knew he was there. You knew he was there. Now, you may not have been, you know, in the intelligence loop, so to speak, but you don't need to be. You know, they can figure out where those missiles are coming from. It's simple mathematics.
Yes, exactly. Especially if your house shakes when the thing's going off, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you know this is, like I said, you know, and this sounds painfully callous of me, but it's the same thing, you know, they're talking about these areas of Mexico with these drug lords and these people that are caught in the crossfire. Move.
Yeah.
Move. Oh, well, how are they going to move? I don't know. Those two things sticking out of their butt that go all the way to the ground?
Yeah, I know. That's another problem. God, yeah, I don't want to go into Mexico.
Well, no, I don't.
Any of my friends that say they want to go to vacation in Mexico, I tell them, nope, not this century. Just wait.
Costa Rica, maybe, but not. You know,
yeah, Costa Rica is really nice. No,
but and
actually a lot, and plus a lot of doctors are moving down there too, and getting second homes. By the way, American doctors.
Gee, yeah.
Because there are a lot of Americans moving down there also. So, you know, that's probably going to be a place to go if Obamacare is still in place here. We might have to go down to Costa Rica to get decent health care.
In place?
Only a part of it has been instituted. I mean,
but the fact that it's a conjecture issue. No, I don't think so. Is it going to be in place? Of course, it's going to be in place. They're not going to get rid of it. And come November, when he's reelected, it's going to get slammed around. You know, No!
If he gets reelected, we can just kiss the United States of America goodbye, as we know it.
I saw a thing that one of the. Tickers. I don't remember whether it was Twitter, whether it was Fox or whatever. There's no way that they're ever going to. They can argue over the birth control thing, and they can argue over unfunded mandates, and they can argue on. Once he walks in the door and he's crowned, reelected.
Okay.
You know, there's no stop. There's just no stopping him.
Oh no,
you
not know, this
and,
time.
And you know that. If there was, all the libs say, if George W. Bush gets elected, I'm leaving the country. You know, so there's an awful lot of people, and I'm not talking about me because where am I going to go? You know, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I can't get up and down the stairs by myself. Where am I going to go? But, you get these people, and I mean whether it's Trump, whether it's Pickens, whether it's Bill Gates, something?
Mm-hmm.
They may not physically leave the country,
okay,
but 90% of their assets have.
Oh gosh, yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Anybody with that has the ability to do so, you know, get your money out of the United States.
I think many of them already have enough somewhere else to just say, I could live the rest of my life on just that bag of shells somewhere.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Because I don't know about anybody else having visited Costa Rica, but as I said, they love Americans there, and the American dollar is pretty powerful stuff down there.
Yep.
And, whether it's Costa Rica, whether it's the Caymans, whether it's Switzerland, Belgium... who the hell went over to Belgium? But any of these countries, my goodness, even some of the Adriatic and some of the Mediterranean islands. I mean, half of those islands are already privately owned.
That's true.
You know, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of islands in the Caribbean that are privately owned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are dozens of islands in the South Pacific that are privately owned, with little communities built on them, with these wonderful luxury homes. They didn't build wonderful luxury homes for the natives with their bare feet and grass skirts. They built those luxury homes for another reason. I can't figure out what that reason is, but they built,
it's a place to get away from the United States once it starts going down, going downhill, which is what's happening.
What did I see? Oh, in the Portland Press Herald last week, I don't remember which day, a guy from Kennebunk.
Yes.
Wrote a letter to the Portland Press Herald, and he had a whole bunch of, you know, bullet points listed there. But the title of his letter was, "The State of Maine Should Guarantee People a Living Wage."
Oh, God, living wage. That phrase just gets me. I mean, what is a living wage? You know, what was his definition of it?
Well, his definition of it was enough to be able to... excuse me, it's a bad day. Inhaled too much chicken dust yesterday.
Oh.
The ability to be able to heat and light their home, the ability to have adequate cable television, in other words, to be able to pay all of their bills and save some money.
Well, you know what, then? If that man wants that, then he should turn around and tell the federal government to stop giving all our money away to all these foreign countries who spit on us and lower our taxes, and then maybe we'll have what he designates a living wage.
No, my answer to the question is even simpler than that.
What?
Pick a communist country and move there.
That's good. I like that one. There's
sure. That's basically what we're talking about. You know, hey.
What, but?
You know, from those who do to those who can't, and from, you know, each, what is it, each man, from his ability, each man to his need?
Each man according to his ability to each, I shouldn't have had that wine.
Yeah, you know
from
what
each
I'm
according
saying,
to,
you know,
yeah, I know, good old,
yeah,
good
right
old
out
Marx.
Of Das Kapital.
Yes, you know. Exactly. Actually, Communist Manifesto.
Or the Manifesto, I don't remember which one. Yeah. I defer to you on stuff like that. You know. Because, okay, let's move it right along here, boys and girls. What about old Vlad?
Oh, yeah, good old Vladimir Putin. Yeah, president for life, I think, right now. He's going to find somebody to turn.
We don't have television. Because those little digital boxes that the government in its infinite wisdom, you know, gave us free for, well, it wasn't free for nothing. I think it cost me 16 cents or something, in tax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great, but there's, where I live, I'm sorry, the box is sitting there looking real pretty, but it's not going to put anything on the tube.
That's right.
You know, So, since we don't have television, I do depend a lot on some of the online streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched an old, like, 1990s History Channel or Discovery Channel or whichever channel it was. I only do this late at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me something to fall asleep to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about Grigory Rasputin.
Yeah.
And,
Rasputin, okay, go ahead.
And you know, of course, the fall of Imperial Russia and Alexandra, who, by the way, was not Russian.
She's German.
Tsarina Alexandra, she was German and English.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in her relationship or lack thereof with Rasputin and relationship or lack thereof with Tsar Nicholas. But I was, you know, these pictures of the Kremlin and stuff, back when it still had crosses on top of it, you know, all the Onion Dome,
mm-hmm,
you know, I was thinking to myself, wow, because they sent out the Imperial Secret Police, which then became the State Secret Police, which then became Putin's alma mater.
Mm-hmm, KGB.
KGB, baby. You know, and,
now it's the FSB, but...
whatever you want to call it.
No, same thing.
He doesn't even bother hiding behind FSB. He still calls it KGB. Why? Because he's in charge of it.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff runs deep. You know? And president for life. Yeah, no, he's not president for life. He's the dictator.
Yeah,
you know, all these people are rioting, and not rioting, but they're protesting and demonstrating in the streets because of his re-election, which they said was fraudulent and all. Okay, yeah, and, you know, it was a nonviolent protest, and it wasn't one of those things like Tiananmen Square. It didn't have to be. It didn't have to be. What do you think, there wasn't somebody in one of those towers with a telescope writing down your name and address? Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to do anything to you while you're standing in Red Square, but boy, by the time you get home at night, they're waiting
for you. That's right, they're waiting for you, exactly. Exactly.
Siberia's population is going to explode again sometime, very soon.
No, he's been reelected under a cloud, if you really want to look at it that way.
You want to talk as euphemistically as we possibly can. He was reelected under a cloud.
Yeah, well, we can just say that for the time being. Then we can get into the real nasty stuff. Let's face it. I mean, he used every single trick in the book to make sure that even if he probably didn't have the votes, that he did have the votes.
It was a cloud. It was a cloud of oil smoke.
You betcha. And already he's trying to close things, it's like close ranks around the Kremlin and everything, starting to make it as closed up as it used to be long, long time ago. He's not going to be taking any crap from anybody, including us. And what's amazing is Obama called him and congratulated him.
That's not amazing.
I see, the thing is, what I'm looking at is that the fact that, did you see that in Pravda, they had the an article on the Sheriff Arpaio, his report?
No, I have never read Pravda because of the dichotomy of its name.
Well, I know it means truth, but you know what, though? No, the funny thing is, though, is that I pulled out the English translation of it, and do you know that they do, in figuring out, what the title is, Arizona Sheriff Finds Obama Presidential Qualifications Forged. But the thing is that they go on and they scold the American media for not looking into this more. Then they go on and they bring up all the things about the Constitution and everything, and what exactly it says, and what exactly Hawaii's Constitution at that time, in order to be considered a citizen of Hawaii, and it's just, it's like, oh my God, you know, you want to talk about, you know, vetting? They just did. They just vetted Obama.
Know thy enemy, baby.
What?
Know thy enemy. They know our Constitution better than anybody.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And the thing is, it's like, I mean, they even went into the cover-up on Justia.com, in which there was that one landmark case. It's Minor versus Happersett. It was in 1858, I believe it is, or 78. But anyway, what happened was they basically erased that. Justia.com erased that case out, which would basically give precedence to those people who were fighting against Obama being in office, saying that he's ineligible. But it's amazing that they would bring all this stuff out. And now we're even more of a laughingstock. However, after Obama...
1875, by the way.
1875, okay. Now, the thing is, with Obama, funny thing is about Pravda, after Obama was first elected, they did an expose on him. I mean...
Well, there's that.
They know.
I don't know if I forwarded you that quote from the Czech Republic, the major newspaper in wherever the capital of the Czech Republic is these days.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
You know, Eastern Europe. I'm sorry. You know, you could look at a map, you know, from 1640, and then look at the one from 1641, and the one from 1642, and on the way all the way up to 2012, and ain't none of it the same, and ain't none of it the right place.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Just one more thing about this article is that basically this was a reprint. Okay, Pravda picked it up. It was from, I think, originally a U.S. source. Okay, and so this was written by an American, but they reprinted all of it. I mean, they didn't, you know, just do selective stuff here and there. They reprinted all of it. And it was amazing. It was amazing. I'm surprised that they did this. I'm surprised. I really am. I thought they would want to keep Obama in because he's a willing fool for them. I mean, Obama's going to get stomped on by Putin left and right. And Obama is just going to sit there and take it.
Yeah, but look at it. Look at it. Wait. He's going to get stomped on left and right. But... you want to talk about brass, baby? Let's look back to Benny. Just this week, he turned to Obama and said, "What's our problem is our problem."
Yeah.
We are not concerned with America's response. Our destiny is under our control.
Bibi, Bibi Netanyahu, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, the
like I said, like I said, though, like, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, the Czech thing.
The quote from the Czech Republic, and the danger to America is not Barack Obama, but the citizenry capable of entrusting an inexperienced man like into the presidency. And, you know, it goes on and on, and it's brief, but it's not that brief. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Blaming the Prince of Fools should not blind anyone to the vast confederacy of fools that made him their prince. The Republic can survive a Barack Obama, but it is less likely to survive a multitude of fools, such as those who made him president. And I'm sorry, that sums it up much better than any lengthy article in Pravda or TASS or anywhere else. That is really the nut. That, you know, you grind away all the chaff and you grind away all of the kernel and you're left with just the germ, and that's it right there.
That's true. No, you're
you know,
right on
and,
that.
And whether Putin gives a dang or whether Netanyahu gives a dang, you know for a fact Ahmadinejad doesn't give a dang.
No.
You know, on top of the fact that he's apologizing for everything to everyone, on top of the fact that he's bowing to foreign people, on top of all this other stuff, it's not that it matters. They just don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the foreign heads of state just don't care. It's, oh, here he comes again. All right, yeah, okay, act nice.
Yeah, act nice, yeah, because hopefully they're thinking he'll be out of there and at least we won't be known as total idiots toward the American people.
Well, yeah, some of the people are thinking hopefully he'll be out of there, and you know, but I'm thinking most of them are saying, yeah, he's going to get reelected and we'll be sitting pretty because he's going to completely bankrupt the nation. All of his, all of these people they want to tax literally to death are going to flee the country. They're not going to be able to muster up enough of an army, a navy, a Marine Corps, or an Air Force to knock the flea off a termite's butt.
Yep, I agree.
And we'll be able to do anything we want, you know, anytime we want, to whomever we want, and just not have to worry about the United States. As a matter of fact, the only thing we'll have to worry about the United States for is sticking our hand out and having them give us more money.
Yep.
And that's it in a nutshell. You know, it's the people who do care whether or not he's reelected are people who do care for, well, let's call it ulterior motive.
Yes.
You know, you can't argue with the guy, I'm sorry, being a ninny. You know, I mean, if nothing else, he's, and I mean, I have every scrap of the fiber of my being, you know, holds to the respect for the office of President of the United States. But, you know, and it's not that I disrespect even so much the man. I just think he's a ninny.
No, he's a communist. You know, no, that's what he is. He's a communist, and he's trying to change this country. And he wants it to become part of the global community. And he wants to take our assets and redistribute them. And no, he's not a ninny. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Let's not worry about the globalization thing, because I'm sorry, pick a president since Reagan that hasn't been in favor of that.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I agree with that one on that one. I mean, I really don't.
The only difference with Barack Obama and the other presidents, you know, when it comes right down to, you know, whether it's the Bilderbergers or whether it's the Illuminati or whether whatever tinfoil hat you care to apply to it, the New World Order or all of this other stuff, is I hearken back to Stevie Wonder's song where he says they don't use colored people. You know, I think that's it. They just won't let him in a club. But other than that, he's doing the same work that both of the Bushes did. He's doing the same work that Clinton did. You know, he's globalizing everything and nationalizing nothing. And and it's going to... I'm sorry, you've got a glaring example to look at. You know, I shouldn't say glaring. You've got the prime example. If you wanted to say, gee, I wonder if this stuff actually works. I don't know. Why don't we ask some of the people in the European Union?
Yeah, I know.
You know, why don't we ask Germany, and then why don't we ask Greece? You know, why don't we ask Britain, and why don't we ask Portugal?
Yep. No, it hasn't worked. It really hasn't worked. And I had said that. I said, I'll be surprised if that lasts 20 years. And so what's it been, 13?
12, 13 years. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah, well, I was right. I was right.
No, it's more than a decade, but it isn't 20 years yet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true. Sure. Oh, by the way, did you hear what Panetta said to Congress about getting the permission of the world first, and then we will decide whether or not to come to Congress?
And I hearken back to St. Ronald Reagan when he said,
We don't
need a permission slip from anybody to defend our national interests.
Yeah, but you know what the thing was is that Panetta basically said to Congress, well, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to go and try and build a coalition and, with international permission, and they were going to get the permission of the UN, and then they were going to decide whether or not to get the permission of the Congress. And I'm like, what? Is this man nuts?
Yes, he is.
Oh man, has he not read the Constitution? I mean, anybody in Congress, I mean, even the Democrats who say they were Obama supporters, if anybody realize where they figure, in these people's minds now, I mean, they don't.
No, they don't. Pass it first, read it later.
I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there.
He wants to form a coalition, and he wants to go, and he wants to get permission from the world, and he wants to go. And, you know, how's he going to get permission from the world? I'll tell you how he's going to do. Bribery. We'll give you a couple billion more dollars in your foreign aid, and we'll build you some schools and hospitals.
Plus what they'll do is they're going to, pass it through the UN, and they're going to be subject to UN oversight.
Committing troops to the Blue Helmets?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, no, say it ain't so.
I know.
There's no precedent there.
Oh, no, of course not. Bosnia?
I'm sorry, Panetta's a tool.
Oh, God, he's a
tool. He's just a complete tool of the, why do you think he got picked after having been a Republican servant, for lack of a better phrase, having served under Republicans? Why do you think they picked him?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. Why did they pick him?
Two reasons. First of all, because he served under all the Republicans. He's got all the chops. He's got all the cred. He knows, what cooks and all this other stuff. Secondly, because they knew they could get him to do what they wanted. Because here's a guy who was just old enough to not be able to do much of anything. Heritage didn't want him. None of the think tanks wanted him.
What are you talking about? He was a Democrat. He was Clinton's chief of staff.
He also served under Reagan. He also served under Bush.
No.
The first. We don't even look him up. And the thing is,
all right, maybe I'm wrong on that one.
That's how he got as far as he did, because he's worked for both teams.
No.
And I
no.
My thing is, he's a malleable tool. And that's why he's got the job.
No.
And Obama says, this is what we want to do. And, this is how we're going to do it. And he goes out and he says to Congress, this is what we want to do, and this is how we're going to do it. And I'm sorry. Give me Rumsfeld.
No, I have to disagree with you on that. He was never with the Republicans at all. As a matter of fact, he was. this should ring a bell with you. He was an executive assistant to Mayor John Lindsay in New York.
No, that's true.
There you go, baby.
But he has held.
No, you're thinking about Cohen. Cohen, who you
is it? Don't depend on my memory.
That was Clinton. Yeah, no, seriously.
If I'm wrong, jump on me because my memory doesn't work as well as it should.
No, he was always a Dem. He was always a Dem.
Either way, whether he was ever a Dem, whether he was ever a Republican, they picked him because he's a malleable tool.
Oh no, he is. He is. He's not a strong person. You can tell.
They picked Sebelius for the same reason.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah.
They picked Sotomayor for the same reason. They don't pick people of strong will and iron constitution and no, they pick people they can whip into submission and say, here's what we want. You look at the press secretaries under Obama. What's he had? 34, 35 of them.
Hey, by the way, just to let you know. His ancestry is Calabrian.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
He's from Calabria. It's family.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, we won't go there anymore.
I mean, look at what's her name?
Pineapple Princess?
Homeland Security.
Napolitano.
Napolitano.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we'll figure what her ancestry is with a name like
God,
that.
God, yeah.
She's certainly not Corsican.
No, obviously not. I don't know.
But, it pains me more when they are Bison, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Because it's like, what is wrong with you? Don't you remember what Italy went through? God in heaven, all the Italians that came here, a lot of them came.
Yeah, but wait. What kind of government does Italy have?
What? They were fascists.
They were. What are they now?
Socialists.
They're communists. It's a communist country.
Communist, socialist, whatever. I mean, the same thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, it is a communist country, a socialist country. It's not a democracy. It's not even a monarchy.
Yeah,
anymore.
But you don't understand. Everybody that left there because it was that way. And now they come here and they start to be the same way? No, I know my ancestor didn't. They came here to be, you know, to be American, to take part in a democratic, you know, to make their own lives the way they wanted to.
Yeah, the American dream, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, the American dream. But then again, you know, so did all the Eastern European Jews, and so did all the Eastern European non-Jews, you know, the Poles and the...
And look what's happening. I mean, they come here, you know, and all of a sudden we're changing to they escape.
They come here and they work and work and work, and their kids go to college, and what do they turn out to do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they've been brainwashed. They really have.
And then the grandkids and their great-grandkids go to college, and they come home for Christmas or Easter or some such thing like that, which they no longer celebrate because, oh my God, they've been to college. You know, now they're atheists.
Yep.
They're sitting there at the table, you know, with their hat with the red star on it backwards and their Che Guevara shirt on.
Yep.
You know, Viva la Revolucion, baby. You know, the American dream is to make it better, you know, for your next generation. Well, we made it so much better that they decided it's too much better. Let's go back to some, you know, and how do you sit there and justify to yourself as a grandparent or a great-grandparent sitting there and you see your grandchild, great-grandchild with a Che Guevara shirt? Let's not even bring in the Paisans, not even bring in the Poles, not even bring in, you know, any of these people, you know, the pre-war Spanish or any of that stuff. Let's go so far as to say, how about if you're in the Southwest and you're a family who came here from Mexico in, let's keep it recent. Let's keep it recent. Let's say the 1960s or the 1950s.
Okay.
You know, and you go and you sit down you know, your grandchild or your great-grandchild comes home for whatever break or whatever holiday and sits down at the table with a Che Guevara shirt on.
Well, yeah, the Cubans.
Yeah, the Cubans, the Gusanos, you know, how do you sit there and not, you know, either put a gun in his mouth or your own?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mijo, don't you know what that is?
Yeah.
That's Che Guevara. You know, what do you put on Fidel on your shirt? You put the Che Guevara. You know, what do you, Christmas, at least put on Pancho Villa. You know.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to wear
Santa Ana, you know. But this is the thing. You know, we've made it so much better. Here's the, you know, when we talk generationally, and I am, I guess I would qualify as second generation-ish, or one and a half, for something. My father was born here.
Okay.
The two brothers above him were born here. The other 11 were born on Compaña.
Oh, okay.
On the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandpa came and went a couple of times. He came over here for a few years, and he went back and got Grandma and a couple of the older boys, and then he went back again and brought back the rest of the siblings and his brother, and not his brother, my grandmother's brother, and of course they all came over a little at a time. And Grandpa worked very, very hard, and he made it better for his children than he had it. Mm-hmm. And all of his children, to my knowledge, worked very, very hard and made it better for their children And at this point, you know, I have an internet forum that is only open to my blood relations.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, one of those typical, right. You know, not a chat room. It's an actual forum, mm-hmm. You know, halfway between a chat room and a bulletin board. Anyway, mm-hmm. And I've got people such as myself. As a matter of fact, of course, my brothers are on there, and Debbie, and my mom actually has an account.
Okay.
You know, and it's nice. I mean, it's not you know this board like you know some forum on Fox News, 353 responses per second kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Right. No. It's just for your you family. Know, keep in touch. Yeah.
Just for my family, and some of the stories that I've listed there from the old days down neck, and you know, which if I have to explain, you won't understand the. You know, the old days when we had the guy going down the street with the cart with the donkey, Adri, you know, the tripe salesman, mm-hmm. And another guy on another cart selling Ubiangaline, which was bleach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one Jewish fellow was the junk dealer,
mm-hmm.
But all the other ones were, you know, whether they were Sicilian, whether they were Napolitan, whether they're Calabrese, whatever they were. But I put some of these stories out there, and you know, my own brothers are not aware because they weren't born in Newark; they were born in Belleville and stuff like that. But to give a perspective, you know, to the younger generation, from the older generation, you know, some of my cousins who are actually offspring of the uncles and aunts that were born on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have also put stories on there, and the younger generation can learn from those stories, at least to not let, you know, the things that made us who we are. We've made it better and better and better.
Right. Yeah.
And now we've made it so much better that there is no better. There's just no better to make it.
Well, they don't appreciate it, and they don't realize that it could be worse.
Well, it could be worse, but I think the point is we can't make it any better. You know, I mean, Grandpa struggled to get his kids to get any education. That generation struggled to get us at least high school educations. The younger parts of that generation struggled to get college educations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, college educations are forgiven or foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, graduate school is now what we've been, you know, working so hard for the kids, and now the kids are all. I've got a nephew, you know, he's still in school. He's been in school for years and years and years.
How old is he? He's still in school.
To be honest with you, I know, but I know he's
mid twenties.
He's in excess of 25.
Oh my God!
I'll tell you that much. He's in excess of 25.
Join the real world.
Well, he doesn't post much on the family board, but I see him on Facebook, and he's posting about this video game, that video game. You know, I know they're video games. Don't ask me the titles, but they're video games.
No, it's okay.
25 years old, and he's got, he's talking about buying, and you know I do computer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about buying this particular sound card and this particular video card and stuff for his computer. And I'm looking at this stuff, and I know what this stuff is worth.
Really?
Hmm. You know, a video card for his computer that's worth, you know, $400 or $500. He's got a job. He's got a part-time job, but I don't know, the electronic places. And, of course, he gets a decent discount. But he's still, you know, even if it cost him a couple of hundred dollars, he's spending a couple of hundred dollars. He doesn't have time to go to school full-time. He can't afford it. All right. But he's got a couple of hundred dollars for a video card. Yeah. Not even a whole computer.
Well, but it is now.
He's also got...
What?
He's got a phone that's more... I've got... How many computers in this house? Six?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a phone that's more powerful than all six of them added up.
Yeah, well, you know what? For some reason, they don't know how to prioritize their lives anymore, like we did. It's like, okay, no, I'm not going to go spend money on stuff that I don't need. I'm just starting out. Let me put it toward rent and food and stuff like that. And then whatever you have left over, you save, and then you, you know, buy, you know, some nice things. They don't do that anymore. They want everything now, now, now. And so what if I have to live with mom and dad? You know, why join the real world? This is...
Well, wait a minute now. I see this to some extent, and
I see it all over. No, I'm not just criticizing your nephew. Right?
No, I see it all over. No, I mean, besides my nephew, I see it all over. I mean, with a lot of the kids that I know, you know, online and in my family forum, you know, and of course, just looking at some of the replies to some of their stuff on Facebook, I've gotten a certain modicum of knowledge of the way their friends act, because obviously they all have shared interests and experiences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of his, some girl that he went to high school with got an internship with, I don't know if it's a senator or a congressman or something like that. And, of course, it's an internship. You know, they don't pay any money.
Yeah, right.
You know, and nobody can understand why she's doing that.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, but now to carry it, hold on, just work with me here.
Okay.
To carry it even further, I've got friends of mine in our generation that are complaining they can't, they can't afford this, they can't afford that, they can't afford the other thing. But they're paying $200 and $300 and $400 a month for cell plans with these monster powerful phones. And they've got computers in their house. You know, I mean, it's not like they don't have, you know, it's the only, well, you know what, I got this phone because I don't have a computer and I don't have a phone and I don't, so I bought this phone, you know, and it does it all for me. No, they've got computers in their houses and they've got phones in their houses, but they're paying all this money per month on you know, especially this one couple I'm thinking of right at the top of my head. You know, she hasn't worked in 10 years anyway. And her husband's got this job that it took him years to find.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could understand wanting to keep in touch. I faced the same thing. Well, my wife's got a track phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every 90 days, I think it is, every 60 days, whatever it is, we have to spend $20 on a little card that gives us another 60 days. And we never run out of minutes because who does she call? Me. And how often does she call me? You know, I don't know, a couple times a week.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I'm getting out of work on time today, but I got to run up and pick up this, that, and the other.
Right,
oh, okay,
right.
Baby. Listen, while you're out, pick me up. You know, something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. You know, it, basically, it's actually more oriented towards an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
It's oh my goodness, I got a flat. You know, or something. You know,
right.
That's really what kind of justification would I have to turn around and say, well, you know what? I just saw this. You know, whatever it's called, you know, the super de duper, oh my goodness, monster Android 2 powered 18G phone.
Exactly, yes.
You know,
I know. I agree with you.
It'll get service anywhere from the moon to the bottom of the mine. You know,
to the sense of
you know,
the earth,
And I can text and I can talk and I can take pictures I think Debbie's actual camera, I think, is a 7-megapixel camera. She used to have like a 2.5-megapixel camera, but my family, because she takes such beautiful pictures, my family about 3 years ago bought her one for, I don't know, Christmas or birthday, whatever. And it's wonderful, but it's like 7.5 megapixels, something like that. These phones nowadays are twice that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't understand it, and that does not stick with the one generation. However, that generation, we're talking about on one of the other forums that I belong to, the fact that there are schools that are taking, you know, we decry the fact that they've gotten rid of health or gym class. We decry the fact that they've taken away music class and art class.
Yeah.
You know, and all this other stuff, and you have to bring your own pencils and paper and erasers and paper clips and, you know, all this other stuff, crayons, you know, whatever it is you need. You have to bring that to school because we can't afford it, but we're going to give you a laptop.
I know. Priorities are all screwed up.
On top of that, they've removed penmanship.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
From the curriculum. They say, well, they don't need it because, first of all, we've given them a laptop. Second of all, we can't afford to give them pencils. So what do they need penmanship for?
I know. It's so screwed up. It is. It's just so screwed up.
I said, wait a minute. So you gave them a laptop, yeah. Well, yeah, okay, so I can read the text of what they wrote. I don't understand what they wrote because they can't spell. They can't punctuate.
That's right.
They don't capitalize.
That's right.
You know, if you're gonna hand them a laptop, you know, went back in the days when we had pencils and pens and crayons. When I was in school, they taught us how to use them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now
exactly.
They took away the pencils and pens and paper, and they gave them a laptop. Well, teach them how to use them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did they cancel English class as well?
Sure they did. Are you kidding? That's not important
anymore. I know they
anymore.
Canceled history because they sure...
Yeah, they definitely canceled it or they changed it and they morphed it into something else.
And you know what you did? I'll tell you something you did.
What?
You know what you did?
What did I do?
You let me rant for half an hour.
I let you rant? I didn't let you rant. No.
How did we get here? I feel like David Byrne. Well,
we just went from one topic to another, which it flowed, Lou. Come on.
It's
it's like the gentle stream that flows from the mountains down into the
I see that Mr. Wallace today on Fox News Sunday.
Yeah.
Has Mitt Romney, Democrat from Massachusetts.
Yes.
As a guest, and he also has John McCain, a Democrat from
Arizona. Yeah.
It's a big difference being one's a Democrat and one's a rhino.
Yep.
So I'll leave it with you.
No.
But what is that? Is that supposed to be a boxing match?
No, they're McCain is supporting Romney.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not going to be a boxing match. It's more
it's going to be a love fest.
Yeah.
It's going to be a love fest, that's all.
So then I saw another thing come across the Fox News ticker, and it's an opinion piece, and I don't know who wrote it, saying discrimination against one religion. And, okay, that religion, of course, would be Christianity.
Yes.
What is the deal with the President of the United States and Islam? Since we already covered Islam to some extent, we've already covered the President of the United States to some extent. What is it with him in Islam? He says he's not a Muslim.
No, he's he may not be a practicing Muslim, but socially and culturally, he's a Muslim.
Well, when he canceled the National Day of Prayer, but then appeared downstairs in the White House kneeling on a rug facing Mecca.
Yep. No, I'm sorry, nothing you can say, anybody can say, can change my mind about that. When he goes to Georgetown to give a speech and he covers the crucifix, don't go to Georgetown. It's a Catholic university. All right? Just don't.
Wait a minute. Hit that one again for me.
After he was elected, about a year after he was elected, he went to go give a speech at Georgetown University. Okay? And he
I have some vague that he went to Georgetown.
Yeah, yeah. And they covered the crucifix.
Get out. Really?
Yes.
Why?
They didn't want to offend. Or they didn't want to detract from his words or something stupid. They wanted to keep it as secular as possible, something like that on that. Why the hell did you go to Georgetown? Stay away from Georgetown. It's a Catholic university. To me, that was a slap in the face. He did it on purpose.
I don't care about the chancellor of the university. I don't care about the president of the university. I don't care about the professors in the university. If I were the board of directors of Georgetown University, and I found out they did that.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be mopping floors.
No, but they did it. They did it, and he gave a speech.
I wouldn't even fire them. You'd be, you know,
he
Mr.
gave
President
a speech.
University, yeah. You, Mr. President of the University, yeah. Okay, you now are the janitor. You, Chancellor of the University, yeah. Well, you're the assistant janitor. What do you mean? Why don't you just fire us? No. We're not even going to fire you. You're going to be the janitor. You know, and you know what your first duties are? All the bathrooms.
No,
you know, they answer to someone within some framework of the church. It's a Catholic university, same as Fordham, same as Loyola Marymount, same as Notre Dame, same as Seton Hall. These are private Catholic universities. if you don't want to have the trappings of Catholicism around you when you're there to give a speech, don't go there.
I know that. But that's what he did. And I'll never forget seeing that.
Oh, my goodness. That one escaped me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that made the rounds for quite a while. And now after, after he does this mandate, birth control mandate, and the Catholic Church is still complaining. At least they're doing something about it.
Of course they are. And, somebody has to. And...
Look, I haven't exactly been, seen eye to eye with the Catholic Church on a lot of things. But I'll tell you right now, after that happened, oh boy, don't, no, no. I mean, one thing for me or somebody else who was raised Catholic and, to criticize the church or something, but don't you tell the church what their beliefs and tenets should be. Do not.
No, that's the thing. I can't understand anything that would heal the schism between the various Christian denominations as readily as this should have.
Yeah.
Now whether or not, not all the churches, within the umbrella of Christianity, not all of them are as anti-birth control of various types as the Church of Rome. I get that. I do. But... Mm-hmm. This is something that, if you're going to sing Onward Christian Soldiers about something, this has got to be the one. Even more so than Roe v. Wade, even more so than that woman last week, this whole thing, I'll tell you what, there ain't that many rotten fish in Denmark, This is absolutely amazing, and the fact that somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to stand there and say, okay, enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, enough. Especially since the same colleges are not arguing with the fact that the health insurance plans have to provide Viagra and Cialis and stuff like that.
Yeah, true.
I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, if you're in college and you need that, you're on the wrong train.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
But the thing is, why is that any different? I'm sorry, that's still reproductive rights issue. The whole thing, with Rush Limbaugh. He came out with this apology. It's not a question of whether he had or he hadn't or whatever it was. You know what was the nice thing about that apology?
What?
And I'll tell you why I think he did it.
Okay, why do you think he did it?
I think he did it because that comment took their eyes off the prize. And that apology kept their eyes off the prize. The issue wasn't what he called her. The issue was underneath of it. The sentence before he called that woman a slut, he used a term he's been using for 25 years, "femme Nazi."
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Where were the feminists for all the other stuff that was being said by Bill Maher?
That's right.
Where were all these, for all the anti- LBGTGTB, whatever it is, when John Stewart was bringing that stuff out. Now the problem is, it goes right back to all the early feminists and Gloria Steinem.
Speaking about Gloria. Gloria Allred?
What did she do this time?
Well, she must have Rush Limbaugh brought up on charges because
what
he said. Yeah.
isn't that precious?
Does this woman still have a law license? I swear, a license to practice law. My God. I mean, this woman is making a mockery of our judicial system. She's amazing.
You know what? Listen, I'm sorry. Gloria Allred to the legal profession Not that the legal profession needs anything to stain its immaculate, reputation.
No, of course not.
But she is to the legal profession what Al Sharpton is to other factors of our population.
Yeah.
If there's a soundbite to be had, she's going to have it.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
There's a scandal, she'll find it, stand behind it, and try to wring as much out of it as she can.
And has been doing so for a generation now.
Oh, my God. Go away, Gloria.
But the feminist issue, people talk about, things have changed so much, the old Virginia Slims ad, you come a long way, baby, and they say, even the glass ceiling to some extent has been, not shattered, but, cracked, and there are holes in it now, and, when you see some of these women that are the chairman of, CEOs mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. What's the one that's been bouncing back and forth in the tech field, and, so you see this kind of stuff happen, and you see in politics, you see people like Nancy Pelosi rising to Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. The various and sundry governors, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, of different states. So, the glass ceiling, it's still there, but it's not, it's certainly not the same plate armor it used to be.
No, it's not.
So you see this kind of stuff, but the real issue is not necessarily paying for someone's overall prescription.
Mm-hmm.
The real issue is feminist rights.
Yeah,
and
that's
the thing. There was a commentator that brought up the fact that slavery was abolished, in 1865, but women didn't get the right to vote until 1920.
Mm-hmm.
So women were still second-class citizens well after we emancipated the slaves. So, when you look at it as a timeline, you miss the point, gals. You missed it. Mm-hmm. The issue wasn't the fact that he called her a slut. The issue was the fact of utter contempt of women.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree.
I'm sorry, that's inexcusable. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to say it was right to call her that or not, I'm sorry, you know how I feel. I don't believe in disparaging someone's honor if you can avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
For years I carried a little Salada tea bag thing that my mom gave me when I was a little kid and I was sick, and Salada tea used to have what they call the tag lines.
Yeah.
And the one that my mom gave me, and I actually sealed it up in scotch tape so it wouldn't mm-hmm. Deteriorate in my wallet, and I carried it around. It says, "A gentleman is a person who never hurts anyone's feelings unintentionally."
I like that. Yes. Yeah.
And I got a hunch Rush has seen that line before himself. And
I am no fan
of the man behind the golden EIB microphone.
Okay.
But I think he just smoke screened his way right through that and put a mirror up, and ain't nobody got the point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the utter and complete disrespect for the distaff side is what was the real issue here. And I think it's a hoot. I really do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think when you look at these, the radical feminist side,
mm-hmm.
the R word, apply it to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Radical Islam, radical feminist,
yeah. That's right.
Even me, a radical constitutionalist,
But you know what? I mean, even there was a report, Barbara Boxer, this past week, she said that we're still battling for women's equality in America. And I'm like, you know what, sweetie? This is my opinion. If the Democrats didn't make women to be victims all the time, you wouldn't have to battle for equality. Because that's what you wrote. You're making that women are victims. The victimhood. That's what the Democrats feed off of, making people victims so they can
because
get in there and battle for them. It's like, stop.
Because if you were a Republican, you'd be recognized for your worth.
That's right.
If you're a Republican as an African-American,
mm-hmm.
I saw a thing that says they don't want that anymore. They want to be called black again. Because not all of them...
came from Africa.
Yeah, no. The big thing saying they don't want
Africa.
To...
Yeah.
Right, and anyway, so if you're African-American, and you know, we've asked this question before, why are you a Democrat? You know, why are you a Democrat? The Democrats were against all of the race relations legislation of the 60s and into the 70s. You know, why would the, of all people, we've said this before, why would the Jews be Democrats?
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, I'm sorry, but wasn't the Klan kind of against them too?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You know,
oh, yeah.
You know, why are any of these people? And it's, as you just said, because you can't fill your pockets with the Republicans.
That's right.
You know, well, yeah, you can, but you have to work for it.
Yep, exactly.
You know, nobody's going to hand you anything from the conservative side. You know, you've got to work for it. Whereas if you're a Democrat, you just stand there with your hand out and somebody will put something in it.
That's right. Well, you know what? I think we've kind of gone over our little limit that we set, our arbitrary limit.
Our arbitrary limit. You know, you did let me rant for half an hour.
I know. I shouldn't have done that. But I think maybe we should wind it up for this week.
We'd be under time if you had shut me up.
I could, you know what? Maybe I'll use the Sister Mary Elephant technique list
class.
Next time. Thank you.
That'll work, because if nothing else, I'll get the joke.
That's true. You and me, and that's it. You know, or maybe anybody else.
I would like to first of all, again, plug the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. People, get your copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and all that stuff. Read it, please.
Yep.
You know, at least once. You know, at least once, read it. We can argue the finer points, but I refuse to have a battle of wits with an unarmed opponent. So please, at least read it once.
Yep.
You know, and one other thing I'd like to do is thank the people who are now our listeners. We seem to have been building quite nicely.
Oh, good. That's nice to know. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
We've got some clergy, and we've got some politicians, and we've got some regular plain old folks.
Oh, wow.
That think we've got something to say that they want to hear.
Well, good. I'm glad. We always seem to think so, but now we have an audience for it. That's great. I love that.
Audience building. I'm digging it, and I'd like to thank each and every one of them. And as Jody Miller says on Newsbusters, tell your friends about us, you know, kind of a thing. And we should have a Facebook page.
Oh, no.
We should have a get likes and stuff.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
you're going to make me do that. Hey, you were just this is the last one. Me, I'm paranoid, remember? I spent 10 years at NSA. I'm more paranoid than the average person, I think, because of that. I don't know why.
Maybe what it is because I'm better armed than most people, so I'm not paranoid about it. You know, what are you doing with all those guns? What are you afraid of? Not a damn
thing.
You know.
I mean, I don't want. No, I managed to escape that, and everybody keeps saying, "Why don't you join? Why don't you go on Facebook? You're not on Facebook." No, because it's a measure for me to keep some sort of measure of anonymity and privacy.
Well,
that's what bothers me. You know what I mean? Now, like I said, I'm paranoid.
Facebook. I'll put my tinfoil hat back on for a very brief moment. I believe that Facebook paid the media in this campaign about yelling and screaming about Google's agreements.
I mean, Google's is bad enough for me, I'll tell you right now.
But I'm saying there was this big brouhaha because on the 1st of March, what they did was they consolidated 64, 65 end-user license agreements into, like, five.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's certain ones like YouTube and stuff that have to have a different license agreement because there's, you know, copyright and things like that have to be addressed. But the average Google, Picasa and all this other stuff that Google just said, you know what, let's consolidate this stuff. And it's not great. I mean, none of these things are private, folks. I mean, it's the internet.
I know, I agree. But you know what?
It's still better than Facebook. It's still better than all of it. No matter which way you look at it, it's still better than Facebook. So I'm telling everybody, go to Google Plus. You know, and not to say it's a plug, but it is. It's a plug. Go to Google Plus.
Yeah. And we're not making any money on that plug, are we? No, not at all.
No, not a dime. Not a dime. Because you know something? If they said, hey, look, if you don't like Facebook and Amory doesn't want to have a Facebook page, why don't you have a Google Plus page? You know, and well, you know what? What are they going to do? Say, we'll give it to you for free. It's already free.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so... No money, no financial, you know, what do they call it at the end of the TV show? You know, who has given considerate prices, other considerations?
Man, I can't remember. I cannot remember that word.
Consideration.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Something like that.
Oh, anyway, you know, the point is that maybe we'll have a Google page. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see what I feel
like doing during the week. You haven't put my bio up yet, for crying out loud.
I know, Barry. We got to get his bio. Where the hell is your bio? No, the picture we got to get up. I don't know where the bio is. I've been looking for it. Resend it to me. Just resend me the bio, and then we'll do that. Okay, no, seriously. And Barry will put it up today. The picture, because the picture, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to get it up today. I got things to do.
I thought you were
a busy guy. I'm a busy guy.
I'm sorry.
I'm not glued to this chair. I mean, I spend 20 hours a day, but I'm not glued to it.
Okay.
Lou, I've been bugging her for 4 weeks to write up something so we can get you on iTunes.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it's been 4 weeks.
Right.
We're going on iTunes?
Oh,
you're
yeah.
You're worried about Facebook and you're going to put us on iTunes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's me.
Okay.
Oh, Emery.
Oh, what? Hey, I don't know. I have a job. I have a house to keep. I've got animals to take care of. I've got a husband to say, I'm sorry.
All right. I'll do what I can to get the bio over there. Do you like that?
Just make a copy. Just make a copy of it and send it over. Okay. We'll talk about this off air. Folks, thank you again for listening. Those of you who are listening, if you like us, let your friends know. But also, I do want to say thank you for our military for allowing us to do this. May God bless all of you. Please keep safe. And we think about you and pray for you. Also, thank you to your families for making the sacrifice that they are making every day. Lou, would you like to say anything?
Indeed, as I always do. God bless our troops and God bless the United States of America.
Samson, speak. Good boy.